In our study today, I want to discuss a question that is in some quarters being looked at, and I think it's a good question, but it may be one we haven't given a lot of thought to. Do the Gospels belong to the New Testament or to the Old? You may look at that and say, that's a silly question. But it is not a silly question in the minds of some people, because some are saying that the Gospels belong to the Old Testament, and that therefore the things recorded in the Gospel, instructions of Jesus in the Gospels, are not applicable to us today. Notably, His teaching about marriage, divorce, and remarriage. Now, I'm not going to deal with that doctrine, the marriage, divorce, and remarriage, and all of that. Today, I'm going to look at this question. Do the Gospels belong to the New Testament or to the Old? The question is really an ambiguous question, and it cannot be simply answered as it is. Because, look at this. Does the question refer to the events recorded in the Gospel or to the record of them? You realize there is a difference between the events recorded and when they happened, and the record that was written of them. We have to make a distinction in our minds between those two thoughts. And then, by New Testament, do we mean the period of the New Testament as a dispensation of time, or do we mean by the New Testament the record of books pertinent to the New Testament? Do the Gospels belong to the New Testament? Are we saying, do the events of the Gospel occur in the Old Testament? Or are we saying, do the records or the accounts, do they belong to the Old Testament or do they belong to the New? The events recorded in the Gospel accounts all occurred during the law of Moses. Now, there can't be any dispute about that. Because Jesus died at the close of all four of these accounts. So that all of the things that are written in those accounts, all of those things that happened, all of those things happened under the law of Moses. And even when Jesus died and was raised from the dead, the new law did not go into effect until it was proclaimed on Pentecost and thereafter. So far as the dispensation that was in place, it was the law of Moses that was in place when these things occurred. However, the Gospel accounts definitely belong to the New Testament age. And this is what we want to study now and what we want to look at. We want to look at the evidence of the Scriptures and see that this is the case. First of all, notice that these accounts were written after the church was established. Are you aware of that fact? That neither Matthew, nor Mark, nor Luke, nor John, not a one of them was written until after the church was established. These accounts were not written back during the life of Jesus. They were not written until well after the church was established. Nobody can really nail down when they were written, but most conservative students think that they began to be written about the middle of that century, so that the earliest of them would have been 50, 55, and then after that, John being the latest one. But all of them would have been written within about 3 decades or so of each other, and all of them were written after the church was established, and thus they were written during the New Testament age. So I think that's a very significant point to remember as you consider the question. Do the Gospels belong to the New Testament or do they belong to the Old? So far as the events in them are concerned, those events happened during the law of Moses while it was still in effect. But we've got to remember that those events occupied a very special position. It was a time of transition. There are passages like Galatians 4 and verse 4. At the end of the times, God sent forth His Son, born of a woman, born under the law, that He might redeem them that were under the law. Yes, He was born under the law. But when was it? at the end of the times. So when he appeared, it was a time of transition. He was preparing for the Messianic kingdom to be established. And that's why both John the Baptist and he said, "Repent ye, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand." Now these accounts were written not during his time, but they were written afterward. They were written during the time of the New Testament. Why were they written? As we look at why they were written, we will see more why they belong as records to the New Testament. Matthew and Mark do not contain statements of their purpose, but Luke and John do. Matthew and Mark serve the same general purpose of providing the facts concerning the things that Jesus did and said. So that when we look at the purpose of Luke and John, which is expressed, we can also understand that these same purposes were basically true of Matthew and Mark as well. Right, so notice what Luke said when he wrote Theophilus. Now Luke was a Jew. Luke was a Gentile. So everything that he knew about Jesus, everything about the gospel, everything Luke had learned about it, he learned after the day of Pentecost sometime or other. This was, with Luke, it was totally a New Testament thing. And he wrote Theophilus and told him that he was writing these things that, and here's the purpose now, that thou mightest know the certainty concerning the things wherein thou wast instructed. Now that lets us know that Theophilus had already been instructed. Wherein you may know the certainty of the things wherein thou wast instructed. Now, what would you say was the instruction that Theophilus had had? What would you call that? What would you say was preached to Theophilus? Probably we would say the gospel, wouldn't we? The gospel was preached to Theophilus. So Theophilus was converted by that gospel. So was it the Old Testament that was preached to Theophilus, or was it the New Testament? It was the New Testament. It did not belong to the Old Covenant. The gospel as a part of the plan of God, and the gospels as the record of what Jesus did, those things belong to the New Covenant. And they make it possible for the New Covenant to exist. They are a part of the New Covenant. The gospel accounts are a part of the New Covenant. So just like Luke, Matthew, and Mark were also written that men might know. Those who wrote the gospel accounts after the church was established wrote them at the prompting of God because God said, "I want men in this age to have a record of the things that I did for their salvation." The things that God did for their salvation were done at the end of the time. At the end of the ages. That means in connection with the last age that has come upon man. In 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 11, "Now these things happened unto them by way of example, and they were written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the ages are come." John wrote his gospel account. He may have written that gospel account as late as 80, 85, A.D. Now then, when he wrote that account, would he have been writing that as a part of the New Testament documents that men needed in order to know Christ, in order to believe in Christ, in order to know the certainty of the things wherein they had been instructed, or was he writing that merely as another book of the Old Testament? Why, the Bible itself makes a distinction in the very arrangement of the Bible. When Jesus and His apostles were going about, there was already a complete Old Testament, Genesis through Malachi, that was in place. There was never any tendency on the part of Christians to regard the writings of the Gospels, the letters of Paul and Peter and all of that, as a part of that previous volume, the Old Testament. There never was any tendency like that. John wrote that these things were written that ye might believe. So, you know, when you look at what Luke wrote and what John wrote, combine them. Luke says that you might know. John says that you might believe. Therefore, I say again that God had these men to write the gospel accounts because He wanted those living in the New Testament age to know what Jesus had done. Now, look at this. When you and I talk about ourselves as Christians, when we talk about our faith as Christians, what is it that we believe that makes us Christians? We believe that Jesus came to the earth and manifested the nature of God, that He was Emmanuel, God with us, that He died on the cross as a sacrifice given by God, that He was raised from the dead. Those are what we generally think of as the basic facts of the gospel. And though they occurred technically under the law of Moses, they were all associated with the end of the times, and the record of all of those things, all of those records were written after the church was begun during the New Testament age, and they are regarded and should be regarded as a part of the New Testament. So John wrote, "These things are written that ye might believe." So these records of the gospel were written in order that men might have access to the deeds and teachings of Christ, that they might believe on Him and be saved. And this matter of believing on Him and being saved by Him are definitely a part of the gospel age, the New Testament age, and therefore the things that make it possible for us to believe and to be saved likewise belong to the New Testament age. These facts of the gospel, these facts about Jesus' life, were written in the gospel age by men who lived in the gospel age, that there might be a record preserved of the teachings and deeds of Jesus. All right, consider another line of reasoning on this point. The gospel accounts contain numerous references to things that did not apply during the lifetime of Jesus, but which anticipated the messianic kingdom. We start out the description of the new birth. When Nicodemus came to Jesus, he said, "Teacher," or "Rabbi, we know that you are a teacher come from God, for no man could do the things that you do unless God be with him." Jesus said, "Verily I say unto thee, except a man be born again, he cannot see the kingdom of God." Nicodemus said, "How can a man be born again when he is old? Can he enter a second time into his mother's womb and be born?" Jesus said, "Verily, verily, I say unto thee, unless a man is born again of water and spirit, he cannot enter into the kingdom of heaven." Now, was Jesus talking about something there which was a part of the law of Moses? No. This new birth was something that did not occur during the personal lifetime of Jesus. This was something which was going to be true of the new age. It was going to be a part of the new birth is a part of the new covenant, a part of the New Testament. It is not a part of the old. And nobody experienced the new birth during the Old Testament. The only ones who could experience the new birth were those who lived under the New Testament. So, here is something that Jesus talked about during His own lifetime. This discussion occurred before the day of Pentecost. It occurred before the New Testament age actually began. But here is something that is being discussed in one of the gospel accounts that was going to pertain to the New Testament. So that the idea is not when did the events occur, the idea is what was the significance of those events. And the significance of those events pertained to the New Testament and the New Covenant. The things that we read about that Jesus did not go back and reestablish the Old Testament. It was already established. What those things did were looking forward, and they pertain to the new covenant. And the new birth is a good example of such a thing. The instructions regarding marriage, divorce, and remarriage found in Matthew 19, verses 3 through 9. In the Old Testament, we read in passages such as Deuteronomy 24, and there are other passages as well that we could look at to see that divorce was something that God allowed under more circumstances. than he does today. I notice this particular thought in the context of Matthew 19. Quite clearly, Jesus is not going to allow them to do what Moses suffered them to do. So, in that context, Jesus himself makes a distinction between what Moses allowed the people to do and what Jesus is going to allow the people to do with regard to marriage and divorce. Well, when would this change, when would it fit? Would this change be made, would it be made between before the old law passed out of effect? Or would this change with regard to what Jesus is going to allow with regard to marriage, divorce, and remarriage? Is that going to be part of the new covenant? Is that going to be part of the messianic kingdom? Well, any changes that he was going to make in anything like that would take effect in the messianic kingdom and would not be a change of the Old Testament arrangement itself. Jesus said, "I did not come to destroy the law of Moses, but to fulfill it." Therefore, he would not have overthrown, as he himself said, not one jot or one tittle. So, that's not when this change took place. So, what Jesus was talking about in Matthew 19 was a change that was going to take place in the new covenant, in the New Testament. So, here's another thing that is found in the Gospel accounts, but it pertained to the New Testament. The conduct of the church, Matthew 18, with regard to a brother. Who had a brother to sin against him. He was to go to that brother and try to get him to straighten it out. If he wouldn't, take one or two with him. And if he wouldn't hear them, then tell it to the church. And if he wouldn't hear the church, then let him be as a Gentile and a publican. Now then, the word synagogue is used often during the gospel accounts. But Jesus did not use the word synagogue. He used the word church. So here was an instruction with regard to the church that Jesus gave during the time he lived, but the church was not established during the time he lived. Therefore, again, this is something that pertains to the new covenant. Even though these words were uttered before the new covenant actually went into effect. I think that one of the most significant passages in this group of passages we're looking at is in Mark 7 and verse 19. Mark 7 and verse 19. Jesus was talking about ceremonial defilement as opposed to moral and spiritual defilement. And he had been asked some questions and so on, but I won't go into all of that. But in verse 19, let's read 18 and 19. "And he saith unto them, Are ye so without understanding also? Perceive ye not that whatsoever from without goeth into the man, it cannot defile him, because it goeth not into his heart, but into his belly, and goeth out into the draught. This he said, making all meats clean." Now then, did this take effect during the lifetime of Jesus? No. Because that would have been overthrowing the provisions of the law of Moses itself. And once again, I remind you that Jesus said that he did not come to destroy the law of Moses. That anyone who taught against even one jot or one tittle of the law of Moses would be viewed as a lawbreaker. And so, no, he was not overthrowing the law of Moses here. What he was doing here in Mark 7:19 was looking forward to a time shortly to come when this would be the new arrangement. In the Messianic kingdom, all meats would be clean, which would mean the law of Moses would not be in effect. There would be a new law, a new covenant that would be in effect. Okay, think about it from this angle. When the apostles preached the gospel, what did they preach? And let's ask the question like this. Do you view the preaching of the gospel as a New Testament activity or as an Old Testament activity? Do you think there'd be anyone who would say, "Well, I think preaching the gospel is an Old Testament activity"? No. The whole idea of preaching the gospel is there's a New Testament, a new covenant, a covenant dedicated by Jesus. While we're on that point, let me refer you to Hebrews 9 and verse 26, where it discussed the high priest of the Old Testament who entered into the holy place year by year with blood not his own. And then it says in verse 26 of Jesus, "Else must he often have suffered since the foundation of the world." But now, once at the end, and the word really means at the consummation of the ages, hath he been manifested to put away sin by the sacrifice of himself. When the apostles preached the gospel, they were doing a New Testament activity. Now, when they preached the gospel, what were they preaching? They were preaching the work that Jesus did. There can be no doubt about this, because in Acts chapter 10, we see and hear Peter preaching the gospel. Now look at these verses. "The word which he sent unto the children of Israel, preaching good tidings of peace by Jesus Christ, he is Lord of all. That saying ye yourselves know, which was published throughout all Judea, beginning from Galilee, after the baptism which John preached, even Jesus of Nazareth, how God anointed him with the Holy Spirit and with power, who went about doing good and healing all that were oppressed of the devil, for God was with him. And we are witnesses of all things which he did, both in the country of the Jews and in Jerusalem, whom also they slew, hanging him on a tree. Him God raised up the third day and gave him to be made manifest, not to all the people, but unto witnesses that were chosen before of God, even to us, who ate and drank with him after he rose from the dead. And he charged us to preach unto the people and to testify that this is he who is ordained of God to be the judge of the living and the dead." So once again, we make the point that the events of the life of Jesus occurred under the law of Moses. Yes, that's true. But there is a multitude of passages that help us to understand that that very end of the law of Moses was a unique time. And I use unique there in the actual meaning of the word. One of a kind. There was never another time in the world like the end of the law of Moses. It was viewed as the end of the ages. The consummation of the ages was upon us. In other words, everyone that had that insight into God at that time knew that, yes, we're living at the end of the law of Moses, but we're not looking back here to the law of Moses. We're standing here on the threshold of a new age. And the events that belonged to the gospel were looking to that new age. The record of those events were written in order to help usher in that new age. And the gospel which was preached was looking to that new age, the New Testament. So when the apostles preached the gospel, they were doing a New Testament activity. And what they preached was what Jesus said and what he did. Notice that Luke says he wrote his former treatise of all that Jesus began both to do and to teach. Acts 1:1. It would be interesting to say Luke and Acts were both written, three decades after the day of Pentecost. All right? Does Acts belong to the New Testament? Surely everyone would say, well, yeah. Well, he wrote Luke. Couldn't have been many months. Certainly not many years, not more than one or two at the most, before he wrote Acts. So are we going to say that here's a man that wrote one book, that's Old Testament, wrote the other book, and that's New Testament? What do you think Luke's view would have been of the two books that he wrote, the Gospel of Luke and the Acts? This one was written that Jesus, of all the first one was written of all that Jesus began both to do and to teach. And we've already read what he said in the prologue of that gospel. Theophilus, I'm writing these things to you so that you may know the certainty of the things wherein you have been instructed. Well, Theophilus would have been instructed about those things by somebody who was preaching the gospel to him. So would the gospel have been a New Testament thing as long as it was being preached to Theophilus? But as soon as it was written down, it became Old Testament? No. And the events that happened, that are chronicled, were obviously chronicled by these men because they believed that those events needed to be known by those in the New Testament. Those events would be the basis of faith for those in the New Testament. It wouldn't be the basis of faith for those in the Old Testament because they were already dead. Did the gospel that the apostles preached pertain to the New Testament or to the Old? Obviously it was the New because it was Jesus that told them, go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. What was He wanting them to preach? He was wanting them to preach the very things that are written in the Gospel of Mark. He was wanting them to preach the very things that are written in the Gospel of Matthew, the very things written in the Gospel of Luke, the very things that are written in the Gospel of John. So are those New Testament or Old? They belong to the New. Remember John's expression of the purpose of his Gospel, that men might believe. Therefore, the events of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John all happened under the Old Covenant. But every one of these books was written during the Gospel Age, and the Gospel is the record contained in them. It is this Gospel that is the power of God unto salvation. That is a New Testament thing. Therefore, clearly, without doubt, the Gospels belong to the New Testament. The fact is, no one would ever have read Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, and then Acts, and so on, and have come up with the idea that Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John do not belong to the New Testament. Nobody would ever have come up with that idea merely by reading the text. The only way that anybody would have come up with that idea was they had an agenda in their mind, something that they wanted to prove to be so, something they wanted to make it so for their own purposes, some idea like that. And when men begin to put their ideas and their desires before what God says, then they are led into all sorts of harmful errors and mistakes like that. When we begin to study from the standpoint of what I wish was true, that is one of the most dangerous of all attitudes that anybody can have. Mark that well. And those of you who are young and have a lifetime of study and service to God before you, you mark that well. When you start out with something you want to be true, it's one of the most dangerous attitudes that anyone can have. We must be able to go to the Word and let the Word speak to us, and then we accept what is said there, not seeking to cram it into a mold of our own making, or moving along with an agenda that we want to accomplish, because that will lead us into very, very harmful errors. Sort of like Paul wrote in 2 Thessalonians 2, the man who does not have a strong love for the truth will turn instead to delusions. And it even says God will send a strong delusion to that man who does not love His Word above all. I hope the lesson has helped on this point. I realize that you may never have even studied the point before. But for years, you know what? I have proceeded on the assumption I would much rather give you a vaccination than to try to help you get over the disease. I would rather you never have the disease than to deal with one who has it. So I believe in vaccination. Always have. There may be someone in this audience today who has not been saved. You know what? I am profoundly grateful for God and for the gospel which He has given. I am profoundly grateful for His grace and mercy. And you need to be. And you need to think about that. If you're not a Christian today, you need to think just how blessed we are. How blessed you are. And yet, though you're blessed so richly, it is as if you haven't been blessed at all. Because you've never taken advantage of the blessing that God has provided for you. So why not remedy that today and accept His blessing, accept that grace that He has given so bountifully. Nothing else matters. Really, nothing else matters except your salvation. Jehovah.